Welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, the Spectator's politics podcast. David Cameron has just finished his last major TV appearance of the campaign, a special edition of Question Time in Milton Keynes, where he was the only panellist, and there were plenty of hostile questions from the audience. I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Isabel Hardman to discuss this. So James, it was a rather feisty session. Do you think the Prime Minister will chalk this one up as a win?
There is a view in this campaign that when the conversations on the economy, Remain win, and when the conversations on immigration, Leave win. And tonight was dominated by immigration. So that's not the night that David Cameron would have wanted to have. I think he found it quite hard to pivot onto the economy because all the audience really seemed to want to talk about was the immigration question. Now, Cameron's performance, you know, definitely he was fired up when he got a question that compared him to Neville Chamberlain. He was very passionate in response to that. But I think the focus on immigration was not what he would have hoped for tonight.
This reformed European Union that we're a part of, like, you still, yeah, fair enough, you've negotiated some changes that you'll be able, which you say, oh, is going to make a massive difference to the immigration. But realistically, it's not. It's not going to make a massive difference to the levels of immigration, what? Especially considering we have other countries that are about to join the European Union.
So what do you want? What do you want to happen?
Leave the single market.
Right. You just leave.
Leave the single market, negotiate our trade worldwise.
Okay.
Isabel, do you think David Cameron expected that?
I think he certainly came armed with a response on Turkey, and I thought his line on Turkish accession to the EU was a good one in that he said that there were probably many good arguments for voting leave, but actually the scare stories put about by vote leave about Turkey and about the £350 million figure were not valid arguments to use. But as James says, the fact that he was having to talk about it and about immigration at length at all at this stage in the campaign is not good for the Prime Minister. And he was, as you say, getting very hostile questions, not just on the subject of immigration generally, but on what he'd done on it. So he really is suffering as a result of making that back of the envelope pledge on net migration. And he's also suffering from not being able to sell anything from his renegotiation that suggests that things will change on immigration.
Yes, they really seemed rather sceptical about his answers on immigration. For example, when he told them that he'd got the special deal to cut down immigration and break the link with benefits, one of the audience members said to him, how do you know they're actually going to give that to you? In fact, here's the question now.
What happens if somebody vetoes you?
Well, they've all agreed they won't. This is
they've all agreed. How can we believe that?
Well, look, this is
James, they were laughing, even jeering at him a little bit there. Was that an embarrassing moment for him?
I think it was a difficult moment for him because if you remember back to before this happened, what David Cameron was hoping for was a treaty that everyone would have signed that would have been kind of, it would have been clearer, but it was happening. This is, Cameron insists, legally binding. Some people argue and debate that. But I think there was a kind of level of scepticism there. You know, this does have to get through the European Parliament, and it probably will. But it's not as easy for Cameron as if it was a straightforward treaty.
Now, James, as you were saying, there was one question that particularly got him wound up. Here it is.
Are you really the 21st century Neville Chamberlain waving a piece of paper in the air, saying to the public...
And here's the Prime Minister's response.
At my office, I sit 2 yards away from the cabinet room where Winston Churchill decided in May 1940 to fight on against Hitler, the best and greatest decision perhaps anyone's ever made in our country, right? Now, he didn't want to be alone. He wanted to be fighting with the French and with the Poles and the others, but he didn't quit. He didn't quit on Europe. He didn't quit on European democracy. He didn't quit on European freedom. We want to fight for those things today. And you can't win. You can't fight if you're not in the room.
All right.
You can't win a football match if you're not on the pitch.
All right. Well, let's...
Now, Isabel, do you think that was his best moment of the evening?
Oh, it was quite a funny moment in a way, because it almost seemed as though someone in a sort of control tower hundreds of miles away had switched on sort of passionate orator mode. And there he went with his prepared speech. And it reminded me quite a lot of his pumped up speech that he gave during the election campaign, where he started talking about taking a risk, having a punt. That's what pumped me up, when he'd been told that he wasn't looking
passionate
enough.
Those were the days when he thought risk was a good thing.
Yes, yeah. Now it's the complete opposite. But he did. I thought it was
a
good
performance to this and other Spectator
in terms
podcasts
of sounding like he was
iTunes
passionately
store.
Arguing the case for the EU. But I don't know whether it really counterbalances what was being discussed about immigration for most of the programme.
And James, I couldn't quite get my head around his historical analogy that Churchill in 1940 decided it was, after all, time to work with the rest of Europe?
I think his argument was that we were alone in 1940, not because we wanted to be, but because we had to be. I did think that the Chamberlain comparison was a bit like you when you see a kind of batsman offended about being bounced by a fast bowler. It got Cameron going. It got his juices flowing. It had been a slightly kind of lackluster performance up to that point because his kind of desire not to offend the audience had kind of pushed him onto the back foot as they kind of constantly pressed him on the immigration question. So I think that was, I think that is the moment that Downing Street will be hoping gets clipped on the news tonight, because also, you know, that is the easier way to make the patriotic case for the EU, which is what, and I think one of the things that David Cameron has struggled to do in this campaign is to sound passionate about the EU, because his argument for joining it, for staying in, is purely kind of seems at times to be based on the kind of risks of leaving it.
Isabel, what do you think the tone is going to be like for the rest of the campaign? David Cameron does seem to have his fists up and be fighting rather hard, doesn't he?
Yes, and because there has been a very strange, very sad hiatus in the campaign over the past few days following the death of Joe Cox, it sort of concentrates the campaign into really just a few hours in the run-up to polling day. And I suspect that both sides were always going to fling everything they had at those final days, but there'll be a slightly more frenetic tone to those final few days because everyone rightly laid down their leaflets over the past few days as we grieved for Joe Cox.
And James, do you think people watching that at home will have thought, well, he gave as good as he got, he had the answers, and he is a man who is fighting? I mean, do you think, of course, the questions were more hostile than certainly I expected, but do you think Cameron rose to the occasion?
He has a problem, which is on immigration. There is no, he can't give a good answer. Because as Jeremy Corbyn said on the Mar show this morning, there can be no upper limit to immigration when you're in the EU, because technically all EU citizens are allowed to come to this country and look for work. And so that means there can be no limit. I thought on Turkey, he is running into the problem where diplomatic niceties bangs up against direct democracy. He's asked very simply, will you veto it? And he won't say yes, because he knows that would infuriate the Turkish government. It would probably endanger the whole EU-Turkey deal on the migration crisis. So he's left trying to having to give these answers, but I think sound to the public like politicians' answers, because that's what they are.
And yes, Isabel, several times this evening, I kept invoking experts as if the very word should cause encouragement and put people's minds at rest. Instead, it seems to have had the opposite effect for quite a large number of voters. And this seems to be one of the themes, not just of tonight, but the campaign in general.
Yes, and it seems to go far beyond a small group of conspiracy theorists, actually. It seems to be a lot of voters do have a real problem trusting people in authority or who appear to be from the establishment making arguments in favour of Britain staying in the EU, even if those people really are the foremost experts in their field. They suspect some sort of stitch-up.
I think there is an interesting thing, though, which is you saw this from George Osborne on the Peston programme this morning. You saw this from Cameron, both in his Sunday Times interview and tonight. Their final message in this last week is going to be that it's an irreversible decision, the decision to leave. That's what they're going to keep on going at, which I think is one of their ways, I think, of building up the risks of leaving. You saw this happen in the Scottish referendum campaign. Don't think you can vote out and then get back in somehow. I think that's going to be a very big part of their message. But, you know, You really do realise how much harder this campaign is for Cameron because he got so little on immigration. If he had, I mean, every time I watch one of these debates, if they just had a vaguely credible answer on immigration, they would be in a so much better place in this campaign.
Yeah, Isabel, time after time I think to myself, well, isn't it a shame that Cameron can't say, look, I've got a significantly renegotiated membership of the EU. I'm coming to you not between choosing from the old EU and no EU, but a new way of doing business with the EU. I mean, even he doesn't seem to believe that his renegotiation is something that he can use as a line of argument to persuade people.
No, he never really initiates discussion of the renegotiation. He seems to be now waiting for voters to say, oh, it's not very good. Can you tell us about how on earth you're going to make any difference at all? Because he clearly doesn't have that much confidence in it. And I think there was a week where he and George Osborne started talking about staying in a reformed EU, but they seem to have dropped that line again. And it's very much an argument for the overall benefits of the status quo rather than the overall benefits of a new exciting package.
And James, I guess next stop is Wembley.
Wembley Arena on Tuesday night. I mean, that is going to be quite a big moment in this debate, partly because, as Isabel said, because campaigning was suspended, but rightly after Joe Cox's awful murder.